This is Wilp's Wake Up Call. We're on every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, bringing you the important news of the day that you may not hear on the regular media. I'm Lori Hoyt, your host, and Dick Paddock is our intrepid engineer and co-host. And Dick, you want to say hello to...
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, so you know who, when that voice comes in, who it is. And we're very pleased this morning to have a guest from one of our favorite progressive institutions that we have a long history with, and that they do such wonderful work. And I'm talking about Democracy North Carolina and our guest, Jabari?
Yes, ma'am.
Jabari Blackman.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Jabari is a summer intern?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a summer intern in the Durham office for Democracy North Carolina this summer.
Great. And that's what all of our groups, we need the influx of young people to carry on the work as some of us are getting a little grayer and older. And I'm so delighted to have you here, Jabari.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what you're doing and yourself and...
Well, I'm a student at North Carolina Central University. I'm a rising senior. I'm on the student council there. I'm the political action director this coming year, so it fits in well with what I'm doing at Democracy North Carolina.
Yes.
And basically what we're working on this summer is really a few things. Making sure some legislation gets passed in the General Assembly to address what happened up in the Supreme Court, the Citizens United ruling. Also making sure that our voice is heard and making sure that we could get some campaign finance reform and voter-owned elections passed in the General Assembly this session. And just some general get-out-the-vote efforts that we're going to be coordinating in Durham and at North Carolina Central this fall, working on that.
Wow. So you have a big agenda ahead of you. And you mentioned, which I think it's something, a dark cloud bothering all of us, the recent Supreme Court decision with Citizens United, mm-hmm. that gave corporations unlimited rights as people to make whatever contributions they want to make with no restrictions at all, so that the power is tilted to those with a lot of money, and we, the regular citizens who don't have that kind of money, are facing, we've been facing that kind of power imbalance, but now it's even more unbalanced. So explain to me a little bit more about what you're hoping to do to counterbalance that decision.
Well, as we have some representatives on the federal level in Washington that are working to see if we can get some kind of appeal or some kind of amendment to the decision in D.C. and Raleigh, what they're working on is introducing some legislation that would make it much more transparent, if that is the new political climate, at least making it more transparent so that voters can understand, you know, which candidate is getting, you know, gobs and gobs of money from one corporation or two, so that, you know, at least voters can make an informed decision about it.
So at least by making it transparent, people can see how the process is going and who is the particular corporation favoring, and what that would mean for the local, for the state of the local community. You know, you can just see BP Oil pouring money into legislators not to hold them accountable for what they're doing. I mean, it's I always see it as legalized blackmail.
Oh, it absolutely is. And Ms. Hoyt, if you've been following what's going on in terms of them trying to find a judge down in the Gulf Coast area to take on BP, when they start doing some of these legal proceedings in court, they've already said that most of the judges down there could not even see the case, because, you know, all of them are on BP's, you know, they've gotten campaign contributions from the oil community, so they might have to find someone up in Ohio, a judge up there to take all the cases, because it's that, you know, married to the system, having that corporate money influencing politics.
Yeah. It's almost like they're on the payroll.
Absolutely.
You know, it's...
It, I mean, almost.
It, well, yeah, and they're, speaking of the judges down there, I was so shocked at the people down there on the one hand who are suffering and so upset and saying, please help. But at the on the other hand, because oil is their second big industry, and some of the families have a fisherman, one brother, and somebody in the oil, and so they're and some of the governors fighting the president's moratorium, which made so much sense to me. I was so relieved, you know, since it turns out that all these safety factors that the government or the people mm-hmm. thought were in place are not in place, and to at least take time to see how did this happen and what's happening to these other rigs that are all out there. And instead, the people are very upset about it. And it just, it showed me how our addiction to oil keeps us in such a grip. But that's a little beside the point of campaign finance reform. I didn't know that they were all the judges, that they were having trouble finding any judge.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you said addiction to oil, because really, you know, that addiction to oil equals politicians' addiction to money.
Yeah, oh, boy, what a good point.
They, you know, they have to run campaigns. Campaigns, the cost of campaigns are exceeding really, really high these days. You know, even in North Carolina, for a seat in the General Assembly, they pay them like $14,000 a year. But you have some seats that are costing $1 million per race. Mm. You know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I was speaking to a group of American, I think it's the Association of American University Women, mm-hmm. the other day. We were at a luncheon, and we were just, you know, discussing the topic a little bit. And, you know, one of the ladies brought out the fact that, I mean, even in California, just to get through a primary Republican race for the gubernatorial seat in California, one lady spent $77 million for a primary. You know, and this is in 2010. Imagine what it's going to be, you know, in 2020 or 2030, if something is not done, if we don't set some kind of a cap and basically just switch over to public financing, because that's really the only option here to keep our democracy intact.
Yeah, I mean, and I wonder if it will become more apparent to more people as this price tab keeps rising. I mean, even here locally, I forget the exact amounts and stuff, but I just know that it was quite, even for little local elections, it's been going up. And in Chapel Hill, and it takes special legislation to be able to do this, they were able to offer public financing, which was a big breakthrough. But some people are fussing about it, using public money. And I'm thinking, isn't it going to save the public a lot of money if somebody isn't beholden to a developer? You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was a breakthrough that Chapel Hill got
there. Oh, absolutely. And that's our main competition, really, is the home builders. They don't want to see mm-hmm. local public financing. And I'm glad you brought up Chapel Hill. And really, you guys are a success story, absolutely, mm-hmm. you know, and how that could work on a local level. Mm-hmm. And just through Democracy North Carolina, I remember 2008, we got three of the council of state races, statewide races, funded through a voter-owned election program,
yes.
public campaign financing. It wasn't coming out of, you know, it wasn't costing taxpayers more taxes in mm-hmm. any kind of way. You know, they had the opportunity to earmark $3 off of their tax returns
yeah.
to give it to this fund. And it worked wonderfully. You know, 9 out of the 11 candidates for those races, they participated, and, you know, they all gave it high praises. What we're looking to do this year in the General Assembly this summer, work with the Senate leadership, work with the House leadership to try to get a bill passed to extend voter-owned elections to all of the Council of State races, and to allow the city governments around the state their own leeway to practice, you know, voter-owned elections. Right now, there's an antiquated ruling in the General Assembly that says that they have to make the decision as to whether a local municipality can, you know, work in voter-owned elections or try to do some kind of public campaign financing. We're trying to get that eradicated this year so that, you know, cities like Durham, cities like Raleigh,
Carborough.
Cities like Carborough, cities like Greensboro, all
yeah.
of these cities who have passed resolutions in their councils to say we want to try it, they can have that opportunity.
Well, you know, I did not realize what a stranglehold the state has on the municipalities. They have to get permission for almost any little thing. I was in a transition communities conference here in Carrboro a few weeks ago, and I was in the how to make the financial arrangements more local instead of depending on like Bank of America and these big corporate corrupt entities. And one of the councilmen was sitting in it, and she said, you know, they had wanted to put their money, the town money in Carrboro, in like self-help credit union, a place like that, and they cannot. They have to put it in a commercial bank. So now they're looking at one of the local banks. But I didn't realize that the state had such a chokehold on any creative ideas that a municipality might have. They have to get like almost a bill passed, you know, and it, which is very tedious and takes a lot of work just to make any little change.
Yeah, if you ever see any reference to a local bill, that's what it's all about. A different way to finance trash collection. All kinds of weird things that you think. Why does the state have that power? How did it relegate that power to itself? Overrule and control municipalities,
like a micro
counties too. Same thing.
Like a micromanagement thing. Why are they using their valuable time with every little ordinance that a little municipality wants to change a little bit? I was there when they were working on the Council of State and got the three, and some of the people who held those positions spoke so favorably about it. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize, you hear Council of State, what is there, I think 7 positions?
I believe so. Eight.
Remember what some of them are?
Yes. That covers, you know, all the major players: the Attorney General, the Treasurer of the State, the Commissioner of Insurance, the Commissioner of Public Instruction. You know, who else is in there?
Well, these
labor.
Well, these things right there, these affect our lives intimately. These are not abstract positions. Insurance. The treasury, you know, how the state is investing its money, which a lot of states are ready to go bankrupt because of corrupt schemes that Goldman Sachs have foisted on them. So this is just, you know, when you talk about campaign finance reform, somehow to people that doesn't sound sexy or something, you know, it's not like, oh yeah, yeah, but it is the undergirding, the root of all the other things we're talking about.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just to give you an example, when they tried public campaign financing with the Council of State races, especially the Commissioner of Insurance, during that race, as more and more candidates for commissioner joined public campaign financing, the corporate contributions for that race went down by 70%. So, you know, it's possible. We can take the private money out of this. It's very possible. But we just need, you know, citizens to support their legislators and, you know, give them that extra courage to go in there and really make a difference in Raleigh.
Yeah. So this state, I understand, is for all the things that were not very progressive and we cringe about. But this state, a couple of things that are really wonderful that the state is doing. And weren't we one of the first where we got campaign financing for judges?
Oh, absolutely. We were a leader in the South and a leader in the Southeast, especially, you know, among those Bible Belt states to really, you know, step up and make a difference in that regard. And that's been, I think it's since the early 2000s. And the judges, you know, they are extremely pleased with the outcome.
Yes.
You know, it takes a whole lot of pressure off of them to raise money among the lawyers associations and among the bar associations. It's really working out very well. You know, we've got a lot of high praises from them.
And if we have to stand before a judge, don't we want a judge who is able to be fair? Because even the best people, it's very hard if your income is involved in the case. And that I'm so proud of the state that and the work of Democracy North Carolina to bring that about. We're going to take a station break. We're talking to Jabari Blackman from Democracy North Carolina, and we are so happy and proud that we have an underwriter, Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street. For those of you who lived around here a long time, you know that this is a community institution run by volunteers. It is very different from the big box stores. It has books that you're not going to find in the other stores. And it's also a community resource. You can go in there and find out what's happening. What is happening that is of interest to the progressive, particularly the progressive community. You can find out more about it on internationalistbooks.org. And just to let you know that if you're having trouble with your reception, because this is a low power station, you can stream us live at WCOMFM.org. So please consider doing that, or if you have a friend who said, I tried to get it, but my reception was bad, let them know, because we have some of the most interesting program of any of the radio stations. We have BookBeat, we have, I can't remember all of them, but they're wonderful, and so is ours. And also, if you have missed some of ours, because all of our topics are pretty up to date, or they're
up to date but timeless.
Timeless, thank you, Dick. That's the word I was struggling for. You can go to trianglewilpf.org, and WILPF is spelled WILPF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And you can get all of our back tapes, link to them on that. And also you can find out more about WILPF, because we are celebrating our 75th birthday in this community. Here since 1935, trying to be rabble-rousers and let people know what's going on and protest the bad things that are going on. So we're here with Jabari, and we're talking about the most important topic we could be talking about, campaign finance reform. And Jabari's filling us in on what y'all are doing.
Well, again, we're working extremely hard to make sure that the Senate takes a look at campaign finance reform during this session. We are, any day now, we're expecting a Senate ethics package to come down the line.
Is this, are we talking about then the Senate in Washington?
No, ma'am, the state.
We're North talking Carolina, about the
up in Raleigh, yes.
Up in Raleigh, okay.
And like I said, any second now, we're expecting a Senate ethics package to come down the line. You know, they have to, especially the Democrats who are in power up in Raleigh, they have to do something in the wake of what's going on with Easley. So they are going to pass something. We feel very strongly that they're going to pass something in ethics reform. And our stance on it is, you know, you can't call it real ethics reform without including campaign finance reform. You know, you have politicians such as former Governor Easley, they're under a lot of pressure to raise that money because it costs so much to run campaigns, you know, and a lot of them, they sort of lose themselves. You know, I've worked for, you know, several politicians in the past, and what I've learned is, you know, at the core, when they were first starting out, they all want to save the world. They all, you know, they have something about them that they want to really make a difference, but this is a real tough business because of the money. And what we want to see happen is some campaign finance reform in that large ethics package that the Senate will be bringing out. What we're looking at is expanding the Council of State Races voter-owned elections program, public campaign financing, hopefully for the rest of the Council of State races.
Wow.
We got three. Hopefully we'll get five more this summer. And then also asking the General Assembly to take a look at public campaign financing on the local level and allowing them to do something there.
Wow, that is just so wonderful. I remember Jerry Brown, you know, who was the governor of California, when he was running for president, came here to Chapel Hill. This is some years ago, and I can't remember which campaign and which year. But I remember he was trying to be, this is before Obama, trying to get where people could call in small contributions, because he said the awful thing is you have to spend all your time on the phone, you know, trying to get money from people, and that leaves you not the amount of time you should have for what your job is as governor, or if you're going to be president or whatever. If you have to go around fundraising instead of doing your job, it's just it just gets out, and that's what happens with our representatives and senators. That, you know, they don't stay in Washington that long. That's, everything's changed. They leave around Thursday or Friday and go home to raise money, and you know, from their folks back home.
Absolutely, and the fact, especially here in our state, you know, the term limits for Senate and House members is 2 years. So right after you win an election, as soon as you get in, probably 6 months out, you have to come back to your district and start saying, okay, I have to run again and raise more money to pay for the next election. Yeah. It becomes the number one priority just to keep your job, basically.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know, you have to, you know, work on your time and say, okay, well, since I spent half the time just trying to keep my job, the rest of the half is to, you know, pay attention to all the things that are going on with the state. And then once I have some time to deal with my constituents, that's what we get left. We get basically, you know, half of their time, which is not how it should be. They're there to represent us, and not, they shouldn't have to worry about just raising funds all the time. On Tuesday, next Tuesday, June 22nd, Democracy North Carolina, we are participating in the Citizens for Clean Elections Lobby Day. That's going to be up in Raleigh. We're hoping that a lot of folks who are supporters of ours and supporters of clean elections and supporters of campaign finance come out. That's next Tuesday. We'll be meeting up at 9 o'clock in the legislative building on the third floor. We've got about 50 folks that are coming out who are supporters of Democracy North Carolina. If anyone else out there is interested, give us a call at our office. The number is 919-286-6000.
Say that number again very slowly.
Sure.
And I forgot, we always say at the beginning of the program, we're going to warn people, have your pen or paper ready, because we always give you some numbers and ways to get more information. So get your pen. Okay, Jabari, give the number again.
Again, it's 919-286-6000.
Okay.
Give us a call at our office if you have the time. We'll be up there from 9 in the morning until session starts. That's probably going to be around 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And we'll be talking to legislators. We'll be, you know, in their offices with the Senate leadership, with the House leadership, saying, you know, I know you guys are working on a lot. You're trying to pass the budget and get out of town. It's a nice, you know, summer you want to spend back in the district. But just give us this extension on voter-owned elections, and, you know, just consider our issue before you leave.
Yeah, well, and also I imagine
just a reminder, runoff election day is also June 22nd.
Yes.
For those of you who haven't voted yet.
And this is an important runoff with Elaine Marshall and with Cal Cunningham. And so it's very important to get out there. I'm going to be out of town next week, so I voted early. I vote thing on. And yes, this is a good reminder to everybody, because these runoff elections are tricky, because a lot of people by this time, June 22nd, have forgotten about it. But you can vote early still today in Hillsboro. I went there, and I think there was only one other person ahead of me, so it was not a lot of people.
If you really want your vote to count, vote in a runoff. Because nobody shows
up. That's right, Dick. That's scary, but that's true. So, yes, get out there. So June 22nd. And then if you don't vote early, run and vote, and then go on over to Raleigh.
Yes.
And support Democracy North Carolina. And if you call that number, 286-6000.
Yes.
I'm sure that they can help arrange carpools for people who aren't quite sure, because I've gone to these things with Democracy North Carolina, and they're very helpful in getting you there and supporting you and supporting them. They're
absolutely
delightful to work with.
We can provide rides from all over the state. We've got, you know, organizers all over the state. If you need a ride, just give us a call.
Great.
We'll be serving lunch there.
Yes, so. Yes, wonderful lunch. wonderful people. It's a wonderful day to be doing such good work with great people that are really fun to meet, and warm, loving people. Yeah.
And again, if you can't make it out to Lobby Day next Tuesday and you do care about the issue, give your local representative in Raleigh, give them a call. You know, call them up. They're up there. Yeah. Give them a call in Raleigh. Call your House member. Call your Senate member. Say, I'm a voter, and I'm tired of the way elections are run now. Please make a difference. Please vote and support voter-owned elections, public campaign financing, and campaign finance reform. They would really appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, and even like we may feel like Ellie Kinnaird is so wonderful and on our side, and Joe Hackney, I guess, is our other one. But even if you think that they're going to vote the right way, they need to know you're at their back, because they are under pressure, and it's going to give them much more oomph and motivation to hear that call from you, supporting what they're doing, thanking them for what they're doing, and making sure that that they realize how important this vote is to you, one of their constituents. Well, that's going to be a big day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So back to the Supreme Court decision. Is Democracy North Carolina, in conjunction with maybe other campaign finance groups around the country, are you working with Congress about getting legislation out there?
We are. We're in a few coalitions, Blueprint North Carolina and the Voters for Clean Elections. And just basically as a coalition, we're trying to pull our resources here in the state to work with our congressional delegation, you know, trying to make something happen in terms of, you know, anything that we can really do in Raleigh to overturn or amend or fight back against the Supreme Court issue. One thing that we are working on is our local congressman, Congressman David Price.
Yes.
Represents the 4th District. I think it's Carborough included.
Yes, he's my congressman.
He and a couple members of the congressional delegation from North Carolina, they're working on a bill to introduce into Congress that would create a voter-owned elections, public campaign financing, basically for congressional elections on the federal level.
Right.
Something that we can do to sort of fight back against, you know, making sure that corporations don't just completely, you know, run amok and take over our democracy. They're getting a lot of support from different House members up on Capitol Hill. Hopefully, you know, we will continue to support him, continue to support that bill, and hopefully it will get passed and we can see voter-owned elections become the norm, especially in Washington.
And would that include, like, for our Senates? Because I know even in this primary, I think Cal Cunningham has way more money than Elaine Marshall. And, you know, and you'd just like to see a fair playing field for these things, no matter who you're for.
Absolutely.
And so they're in a primary to run against Burr for the Senate. So do you... Would that bill that you're working on, would that include those running for the Senate as well as House?
Yes, ma'am. It would include all members of Congress, House and Senate, and they would have the opportunity to, you know, basically plug into campaign financing. I mean, again, you remember we have it for the presidential race.
Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't make sense. You know, people are saying, well, you know, I don't want welfare for politicians and this, that, and the third, but we have the system in place for the presidential race, the highest office in the land here in the United States. It would just make sense to extend it all the way down through Congress and through our state government elections. So that's what we're trying to do.
And I guess what you try to do is a lot of public education against that very point where some people say, oh, I don't want to provide welfare for politicians. I don't want my money going to them. They don't realize that the money going to them is going to save them so
Absolutely.
Much money in the end. Are we getting you?
Yeah, we've got about 30 seconds to wrap it up.
Okay.
Give that phone number again.
Real quick, it's 919-286-6000, Democracy, North Carolina.
Democracy. Thank you, Jabari. It's been wonderful having you here, and it's just given this surge of hope in these dark times with the work that you're doing. This is Lori Hoyt speaking for Wilf's Wake Up Call with Dick Paddock. Goodbye, and have a wonderful day.